From Paris to Portland, you've picked up the guidebooks. You've followed the advice. This is the Fromer Travel Show. Pauline Fromer, president of Fromer Media, and Jason Cochran, editor-in-chief of Fromers.com, with the most complete, the most up-to-date travel information available anywhere. The pages of the Fromer's guidebooks come alive right now, exclusively on 77 WABC.
And it's time to talk travel. I'm Pauline Fromer.
And I'm Jason Cochran.
And Jason's on a bit of a lag because he's still in London, lucky guy. So if anybody has questions on London or England, now is the day to call in. We also want you to call in with your answers to this question of the day, which comes from one of our listeners. And I'm so glad she emailed us. You can email us as well as call us. So the number to call us is 800-848-WABC. That translates to 800-848-9222. But you can also email us, and we answer all emails. The address is FromerTravelShow@yahoo.com. That's the number, that's the address that Mary Beth in Pennsylvania wrote to, and she wrote, "We've been hearing about places like Venice and Barcelona being overcrowded by cruise ship passengers. Can you talk about some great destinations that are cruise ship and river boat free?" So we'd love to get your input on this, too. Give us a call, 800-848-9222. I guess another way of saying this is, what are great inland destinations, ones that don't have ports in them? Jason, do you have an answer for that?
Well, the obvious one that I will skip over because I am in it right now, but it's London. And if a cruise ship comes, it's miles away, and it doesn't really affect the city. You know, it's always busy in London. But what popped into my head is Cape Town. It gets a few cruise ships, but it's not overrun the way Venice or Barcelona might be. So I would pick Cape Town, South Africa. There's a lot going on. It's a rich culture. The food is fantastic. And it's not overrun with crowds of tourists. So that's a good choice.
Yeah, or Madrid, if you're nervous.
Madrid, sure.
Barcelona, I love it. It's the only other city in the world other than New York City that I actually feel I could live in someday just because it's such a spectacular place. But that being said, I'm not the only one who feels that way. So it can get overcrowded, especially when the cruise ships are in port. So second choice might be Madrid, which for many people is the first choice. It's the capital of Spain. It has the incredible Prado Museum, as well as many other incredible museums, a great tapas culture. So you spend the evenings hopping from one place to another. And I love going to Spain from the United States because, unlike many other European destinations, you can kind of stay on American time while you're there. They eat dinner, at 11 o'clock at night. Many of the museums are open till about 6. So you can sleep late in the morning and not be totally fogged in from the time change and not miss anything. So that's our question of the day, 800-848-9222. What are some of your favorite destinations that cruise ships and river boats never, ever touch? We also got a question via the email address, which once again is FromerTravelShow@yahoo.com. You can email me there. You can always hit us up on Twitter, too. We're at Fromers. We have a Facebook page with that name, too. Pinterest, you name it.
But that was a sales pitch. But what was the question?
The question is, this person, I don't have it pulled up, but I remember it. Let me just, I'm not going to take the time to pull it up. But they heard from somebody that when you go to Copenhagen, you have to have your passport with you at all times, that you can't keep it in the hotel safe, that you'll often be asked for it. I've never encountered that in any European nation.
No.
Have you?
No, I have it outside of Europe. You know, if you go to Turkey or even, Southeast Asia, but I've never really had that in Western Europe. Now, mind you, I prefer to keep my passport on me at all times.
Really?
I don't like to leave it in the hotel safe. I don't always do it. You know, when I'm in London, I don't. But if I'm not familiar with the city, I certainly do. If I'm not familiar with the hotel, I might. But no, I have never heard of, and I haven't been stopped and frisked and asked for my passport in Copenhagen. The only time I've ever asked for my passport in Denmark is if I'm checking into a hotel.
Oh, yeah, no, I've never encountered this. Well, let's also talk about some of the news of the day, because some of it's quite important for folks who are traveling. If you're planning to fly this summer, you will not be alone. Everybody from the airline association to the airports are predicting that this will be a record-breaking summer for travel. We are going to see more people in the airports than ever before in the history of air travel in the United States. It's up 3.7% from last year, which had been a record. There are going to be 246 million people flying from airport to airport in the United States.
And you know what I say? They'll all be in front of you in the TSA line.
Yeah, and they'll all be cramming the overhead bins with their coats, not realizing, damn it, you're only supposed to put your luggage up there.
Well, I think that one of the reasons for this first of all, these are the airlines and the airports telling you this, so take it with a grain of salt. But I guess part of it is based on the bookings they've already received, but gasoline is going to be higher priced, already is higher priced right now. So perhaps, you know, that is something that is causing the airlines to, you know, to be, have bigger business.
Right, right. No, absolutely. So you're going to have more hassles at the airport. You wrote a really funny blog this week for Fromers.com about how to get around one of the major hassles in the airport. What is that?
It's only if you have an overflow, a little bit of overflow to your luggage. You bought one or two extra pairs of shoes, something on your vacation, it doesn't fit anymore. What do you do? You can't have a whole new bag with those shoes bouncing around inside. You'll have to pay a whole other fee. I suggest when you're traveling, you go and look at the website of the airline terminal that you're going to be using, see what shops are in it, get a hold of one of those bags, because you know it's always a chain. You know, you'll find the same chains in town. So get one of the bags, even if you have to buy a tube of chapstick at the newsstand, you know, that'll get you the bag. And then you can put the shoes in there so you don't have to worry about overflow or the book or whatever it is. As long as you don't stuff it full of clothes and take up space that other passengers need, there's no reason why you shouldn't be able to put a few other things in a shopping bag, like a decoy shopping bag that camouflages its way through the airport.
Right. I thought that was very sneaky. You also had something you called the Ramadan trick for when you go to a city and it's overcrowded, but it happens to be the Ramadan period. Why is that good for travelers?
Well, that happened to me. I came up with this week because, you know, I'm in London and it's a very, very busy week in London. It's the Chelsea Flower Show. And I don't know if you've ever heard of this thing, but it's an annual tradition and people fly in from all around the world. Tickets can be £100, which is like $140 right now, just to see all the flowers and the different florists and the people who grow the – because England loves its flowers and its gardens. But okay, so prices were incredibly high on the hotels. I could not find any place less than £450, which is like $600. Oof. And nothing, they were all booked because of the Chelsea Flower Show. And I was stumped. I could not figure out a single thing to do. Even the dumps, you know, 6 miles from town were £200-300. But I went onto one of the websites for Starwood. And I said, well, maybe I'll use some of my points to try to, you know, something. If I have to, I'm not going to spend $600. And I found only one of maybe 10 Starwood choices in London was available. And I booked it and I went to them and I said, why? Why are you guys empty when everyone else is full and has nothing to offer? What, did someone cancel? Did a group decide they didn't want to come? And they said, no, it's Ramadan. And I said, I know what Ramadan is. It's the Muslim festival, Islamic festival, you know, that takes about a month, and there's very strict rules about what you can eat. And so people don't tend to travel very much if you're a Muslim. You don't tend to travel during Ramadan. And I said, but why did that matter here? And she said, we're popular with Arab and Middle Eastern travelers.
Huh.
So when they don't come, we're empty. And I thought, well, that's a great idea. If you cannot find a place to stay during the month of Ramadan, because, you know, then go choose the hotels that are popular with the Asian, I'm sorry, with the Arab and Middle Eastern travelers. And in the article that I wrote, I call it the Ramadan trick. I put a couple websites where you can figure out which hotels are popular among the halal traveler.
Right.
And it's a great way to possibly find availability when there wasn't any, or save money when you might not have thought it was possible. And if you're Muslim, of course, you won't be traveling on those days.
Right.
But if you're not Muslim, it's a great little trade. It's like when a Jewish family goes to a Chinese restaurant on Christmas.
Right.
It's kind of the same thing.
Yeah. Well, I thought it was really smart, good tricks. You can find them on Frommers.com. I'm looking at the clock. It's time for a break. We'll be right back. But before we go, let me remind everybody, as Jason has been talking about, things can go wrong when you travel. He was having trouble finding a place to stay. That's the tip of the iceberg. Imagine you go someplace really exotic. You're on a safari in Africa and you fall and break your leg. And there aren't any medical facilities for miles. You have to be medevaced out. Medevacing out can cost $10,000, $15,000, $20,000, and that's no exaggeration. So you want to have travel insurance for trips big and small, and the company you want to buy it from is Allianz Travel Insurance. They cover delays. They cover lost luggage. They cover when you get ill and have to be taken care of. To learn about all of their policies, visit Allianz travelinsurance.com. That's Allianz travelinsurance.com.
This is the Frommer Travel Show. Inspiring locations, inspiring ideas for New York. Live, local, on it. 77 WABC.
Welcome back to the Frommer Travel Show, where we are taking your calls at 800-848-WABC. That's 800-848-9222. And you know what always happens in these shows? We get all the calls at the end, and we don't get them all on air. And then people have their questions and comments left unanswered. So please call us at the beginning of the show rather than at the very end. The very end is about, 40 minutes from now. 800-848-9222. So we always talk about traveling to other places in the world, but there's so much going on in New York City that for those who are in the city or are in driving distance of the city, it's worthwhile to take a staycation. And I know that because I write the book, Frommer's Easy Guide to New York City. The 2018 is out now. I'm in the middle of researching 2019, which means I'm going clubbing at night. It means I have to come home and take a disco nap, which my teenagers giggle at. I go to these great restaurants, and I'm seeing all of the new sites, and there's some really interesting new things going on. For example, the New York City Aquarium is finally reopening, and they have a fascinating new building. It'll be open in June. I got a preview. It's all dedicated to sharks and to this area that's 40 miles off the coast of New York City that's called, I think it's called something like the Grand Canyon of the Atlantic. It's this drop-off that drops something like 400 feet. And because of that, there's all of these interesting marine critters down there that you usually only see farther out in the deep, deep ocean. But because we have this deep dropout fairly close to shore, it's all in there. But it's a wonderful new facility. I think it's going to grow.
So do they have these fish in the aquarium now, like a high-pressure tank or something, or something they just have signs about?
No, they have the fish in the aquarium. They have kind of a replica of that area, obviously much, much smaller. But it engages the imagination because you don't realize that, just 40 miles offshore is this Grand Canyon on the ocean floor. Really a national wonder and very interactive. Little kids are going to love it. Adults are going to love it. There's going to be a nice rooftop bar restaurant, and near it is a Please Touch pool for the little ones. So the kids can be totally engaged with the marine critters while their adults are drinking in the sunlight. I think it's a wonderful new thing. I mean, it took them so long to recover from Hurricane Sandy. Basically, 60% of that aquarium has been closed since that storm. Interestingly enough, I asked them, you know, obviously the buildings were wrecked. What happened to the animals? And except for an octopus and a couple of other creatures, they all were able to surf it out, which I guess makes sense. They were inundated with water, but that didn't disturb.
They're fish.
They're fish, so they were okay. So that's going to be opening in June. Highly recommend you go there. Highly recommend you go if you haven't been to the Intrepid or if you haven't been in a while. For a long time, they've had this really great exhibition about the USS Growler, which was one of the first nuclear submarines. And you always did this thrillingly claustrophobic walk through it because literally they give you a test. If you can fit through this small porthole, you can take the tour. If you're too big or if you're not nimble enough, they're not going to let you down there because there would be a traffic jam. Because it really, you have to crawl through it. It's so narrow. But you would walk through it, but you wouldn't have an understanding of it. But now they've created this marvelous house right next to it, which tells you about what life was like there, and the fact that they wouldn't shower usually for the entire course of their time underwater, which could be 2 months, and they didn't do the laundry either. Can you imagine?
Yes, I can. And I don't like to imagine.
Yeah, so those two things are new. And there's also a couple of sillier attractions in Times Square. You know, I often have tourists asking me, where should I stay? I guess I should stay in Times Square because that's near everything. And I always say, oh, please don't stay in Times Square. That's the part of New York City that locals avoid at all costs unless you're
going people stay in Times Square and then they say, I could never live in New York. It's too crowded. And I want to say, but most New Yorkers don't live there. So it's, you know, we have little neighborhoods with, you know, cute little buildings and we know our neighbors.
Exactly. Exactly. And and the food is always overpriced there. And it's near the Broadway theaters. It's near Fifth Avenue and Rockefeller Center and the Museum of Modern Art. But, you know, if you want to see our great other museums, you're going to have to stay uptown. If you want to see the 9/11 Memorial and go to the Statue of Liberty, well, you'd be better off downtown. So I think just stay where in a less maddening place. But anyway, now there are a couple of attractions in Times Square that may be worth visiting. There is the Grand Old Opry. I think it's called Opry City. They have opened an outpost right off Times Square where every once in a while you will see a genuine country star, although it seems like most of the time you're seeing cover bands and eating pretty good barbecue. It's okay, you know, it's very unusual for New York. It's kind of a new part of the nightlife scene here. There's also National Geographic has opened up a water-free aquarium in Times Square. It's this high-tech, incredibly interactive series of underground rooms that you go to, and the theme of it is you are the fish in a certain way. So at one point you get eaten by a whale. At other points you're surrounded by these incredibly dynamic projections of fish. Some of them are 3D. I mean, it's really, really great tech work. But it costs a lot of money.
Is it a temporary?
It's not
a permanent thing.
It's permanent. It's permanent. They say that they may end up switching the exhibit, but for now and into the foreseeable future, it's going to be this. And I liked it. It kind of broke my heart. I think it was like $35 per person. And that's higher than any museum in New York, and you only spend 45 minutes in it. So even though the technology was thrilling and I learned a good amount, it just seemed like that was just too much for only 35 minutes. The other newish thing is this thing called Gulliver's Gate, which is the largest miniature exhibition in the world. So you go and you see the Empire, the Statue of Liberty in miniature, and Midtown Manhattan in miniature, and Paris, the whole city, you know, in inch-high buildings. That, too, is really well done. And it's fascinating because you see people working on these little miniature buildings, which is a lot of fun, too. But it, too, is in the 30s, although I don't think they're going to be able to support that. Every time I've gone, you can find discount codes everywhere, so do get one. And it's a little odd. It was developed by an Israeli firm. So Israel gets an entire room, whereas the entire country of India is only represented by the Taj Mahal. So there's some definite odd focuses in it. Not that it's not great to see all of Israel. It's actually very well done and quite fascinating. But I would have liked to see more of India because India is much bigger than Israel, obviously. I'm looking at the clock. We have to take another break. Let me remind everybody, we want to talk with you. I know you're all out enjoying the sunshine, but if you're traveling later in the summer, if you have questions, if you have comments on travel, don't be shy. Give us a call, 800-848-9222. Back in a flash.
The most popular destinations for you and your family, right here. Pauline Frommer and Jason Cochran, The Frommer Travel Show, 77 WABC.
This week's program is brought to you by Allianz Travel Insurance. Protect your travel investment from unexpected problems with Allianz Travel Insurance. Visit Allianz travelinsurance.com. And let's get right to the phones. If you'd like to call us, our number is 800-848-9222. That is the number that Michael from Thornwood, New York called. Hello, Michael.
Hi, how are you?
Doing great. Hi. Nice to hear from you.
Yes, thanks. I listen to the show all the time. Great show. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks.
So what's on your mind?
I booked a, I was telling the screen there before, I booked a family cruise for third week in August, a Disney cruise out of Orlando, and the cruise leaves on the Monday, but we have the, we get in late on Saturday. We'll have all day Sunday in Orlando, then we have the cruise gets back on Friday, Friday morning, and then we have Friday and all day Saturday. Any suggestions for the theme parks in and around? Or I guess you know we're staying very, very, and we're staying in Orlando, just about I guess you know maybe like 5 minutes from the airport.
I'm an Orlando expert, strangely, because I write the Frommer's Guide to Orlando. And you know, the first thing that came to mind is of course, why don't you just go to Disney World? I mean, go to the Magic Kingdom, because your kids are 4, 8, and 11. They're the right age for that park, especially. There's a lot of stuff for little kids to do, and I think that when you're on a Disney cruise, they give you don't they give you some sort of transportation automatically to the parks if you want to? So that would take care of some of your transportation requirements as well.
Awesome. Perfect. Yeah. Definitely just do the Magic Kingdom. That'll,
Saturday since you want a full day there. It's considered probably the premier of the four Disney theme parks in Florida, the premier, the best one. And it's also the most popular theme park in the world. So you know you're getting the best when you go to number one. And there's a lot of theme parks in Orlando, but I really do think that the Magic Kingdom is best if you have little kids. That's really geared for them. There's no scary thrill rides really to speak of. There's so many things for little kids to be happy to do.
But what about the 11-year-old?
The 11-year-old, that's the problem. The 11-year-old has to do what the 4-year-old wants. You know, you can't all do the roller coaster. You know, but there's also Legoland. Think about that as well. It's another park that's really geared to the little ones. All the rides are scaled down for kids more than anyone else. And the Legoland is also not too far from all of that.
See, my heart is breaking for the 11-year-old because I know probably the 11-year-old is dying to go to Harry Potter World.
Yeah, I know, but you know,
can you guys divide and conquer? Can some of you go to the Disney theme park and then some of you go to Universal instead?
I think, yeah, well, I'm sure we'll work something out. As I said, we'll have it spread like peanut butter on a 6-foot heel, all right, all over.
That's a great, I've never heard that, but I love it. Thank you for calling, Michael. We appreciate it. If anybody else wants to call, once again, the number is 800-848-9222. And Jason, okay. Jason, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm right here.
Oh, okay. I wasn't sure if we could hear you, because Jason, as we know, is in London, which makes it a great day to ask London questions and UK questions. 800-848-9222. Jason, I know you're researching for the book, which always involves seeing new sites. What have been some of the interesting ones you've seen recently?
You know, today, I like to do history. I like to go back and find places where important things happen. Today, I went to southeast London to see where Bob Hope was born.
Huh.
On Tuesday, it'll be 115 years. People don't realize he was born British.
Hmm.
He's from London, from Eltham. So I went to his home, basically, where he was born. And I think he came to the U.S. when he was very young. There's going to be a new exhibition all about Bob Hope, by the way, in New Orleans.
And was it interesting? What'd you learn there?
Nothing. You're not allowed in. Someone lives there.
Oh. This was just like a private pilgrimage.
I think there's a lot of people who do, when they go to places, they go to see the thing, you see places that they've read about or people they like were from. That's what I did earlier today. And now I'm back in a hotel that we have been covering for years. It's been under my guide for London for years. It's called the South Place Hotel. And it's one of these hotels that has free movies in the room, which I don't know why every hotel doesn't do.
Yeah, that's nice.
It makes you want to stay in your room and, you know, order things.
Right.
So I'm really excited to watch a movie later on after this is all done. That's what I did. I went to go see where Bob Hope was born. And then I went mudlarking. We've talked about that before in this program. But it was a beautiful Saturday. It's probably as warm here today as it is in New York.
It's 89 degrees here.
It's 85 degrees here, and it's bright sunny.
That can be a problem in London because they're not used to that. Are they getting air-conditioned up finally? Because I know that a lot of hotels didn't in Paris and in London, you know, the very cheap ones never had AC. Is that still the case?
Well, the more expensive ones do, unfortunately. The mom and pops in the old townhouses, they don't. The South Place where I'm staying has AC because it was built in the last 6 years.
Right.
So if you're really worried about going in the summertime, and it is getting hotter, I'm telling you, every time I come, there's another heat wave, and it
right.
never used to be the case.
I know.
You kind of have to spring for more of a luxury-type hotel. Yeah.
Last year, they called it, there was a whole name for the heat wave in Europe. Do you remember? It was very piquant. I can't remember the name of the nickname. I know the Beast from the East was what they called their hit of Arctic weather that hit them this winter. Yeah, you now have to be ready for really extreme weather. Well, let's get on to happier things. Let's move back to the phones. 800-848-9222 is our number. Bill from Stonington, Connecticut is here with us. Welcome, Bill.
Yes. Hey, I don't know if anyone's ever asked you this, but I've kept one of we went to Europe on one of your father's books many years ago, and we've kept it in the house and used it for different things and
doorstops. Sorry, go ahead.
We're trying to in the fall. We're going to try to recreate what we did I think it was 1978.
How great!
And we still have the book, but what we're wondering is we know. We're going to do the neighborhoods. We know everything's not there anymore. But we used to just go from train to train to train.
Yeah,
We had a Eurail. We had a Eurail ticket. And we just, it seems now you have to have reservations. Can you just go train to train?
In the summertime, right, you know, June, July, you need to make reservations. In the spring, the fall, and the winter, not necessarily. And you can still, by the way, get a Eurail pass at any age. You just have to pay more than you would be able to do if you were under 26.
Yeah, but it's a great way to see Europe. And, you know, there's actually a book Jason, do you remember the name of the book? A guy decided to use Europe on $5 a day and follow its advice.
Europe on 5 Wrong Turns a Day by Doug Mack.
Yes, exactly. It's a fun book. A book. You might want to read it as you yourself are traveling. Yeah. Following.
He recreated his mother's trip from the 1960s using Europe on $5 a day. And by the way, you know, we recently did an article on Frommers.com comparing some of the things that were in those early guides that are still open. And there are still a number of restaurants and hotels that have been open all these years. And in London, one of them is called the Alhambra Hotel. It's been in there since, you know, two generations back used to run it. So you can find here and there places to truly recreate your old trip from the 70s.
And one other thing, on all of these airfares, I mean, you know, we're not going to get, it's not like,
it's a good year to go to Europe. The prices have been dropping because there are a lot of what we call upstart carriers who have been discombobulating the market. So if you look at such sites as Norwegian Airlines, that might mean you have to fly from Stewart rather than from LaGuardia or JFK or Newark. Or if you look at XL, the letter X and the letter L, they go to Paris very cheaply. But because the others have to compete with them, we're seeing prices lower than they have been in years to get to Europe.
Okay,
and
so
WOW and Primera, those are two more. There's a lot of them popping up.
Okay, so it's pretty good to take these alternative planes then.
Yeah, just don't pack too much. That's all. You know, if you keep your packing light, you have a lot fewer extra fees, and it comes out even with the fees. These airlines are often much cheaper than standard tickets.
Like these ones in Europe, Ryanair and some of these other, I've heard difficult stories about those.
Well, they get you. They have smaller carry-on bag allowances than we have in the United States. And so you get a cheap fare. You can get a fare for 19 euros, which is probably the equivalent of, what, $26 or so. But then if your bag is slightly too big to be in the cabin, boom, you get hit with a $60 fee. So,
but that's Ryanair. It's not the way that Norwegian works or Primera or XL or WOW. Ryanair is notorious for, like, if you need to print a boarding pass at the airport, you have to pay. These other airlines that we described just a minute ago, they're no frills, but they're not, like, gonna try to trick you into spending all that extra money.
Yeah. Okay. Have a wonderful time, Bill. We hope you'll call us back and let us know how it goes. I'm looking at the clock. We have to take another break. Let me remind everybody we're taking your calls at 800-848-9222. And let me remind everybody, too, that Frommers works with Allianz. Not only do we read the ads on the show, but we have provided them with some really nifty content to give to the people who buy their policies. I'm talking about advice on how to plan the best itinerary, advice on what are the top sites that you must see in different destinations, about 24 destinations across the globe. If you'd like to get this, if you'd like to learn more, visit the website of Allianz Travel Insurance. That's Allianz, travelinsurance.com. Allianz, travelinsurance.com.
Get a jump on vacation plans. The Frommer Travel Show. Pauline Frommer and Jason Cochran. 77 WABC.
This week's program is brought to you by Allianz Travel Insurance. Protect your travel investment from unexpected problems with Allianz. Visit Allianz, travelinsurance.com. And we have about 14 minutes left in the show. That's enough time for more calls if you want to call them. Call in. Our number is 800-848-9222. Earlier today, we were talking about staycations, and we in the New York City area are so lucky because we have the greatest theater in the world, with the possible exception of London, which is where Jason is. That's one of the things that both Jason and I cover in our guides are tips and tricks for getting the best prices on theater tickets and also getting into the shows that are constantly sold out. And I actually learned this new tip when I was at the New York Times travel show this year speaking. Somebody came up to me. I was signing books afterwards. And we were talking about the fact that she had just seen Bruce Springsteen. And I said, my goodness, how did you get the tickets? She said, it's the fourth time I'm seeing him. I said, how did you do it? She says what she does is she goes to StubHub. And she looks at the folks who have bought the tickets in order to resell them, to jack up the prices. She waits until 6 p.m. in a theater district hotel. And usually by 6, 6:30, 7, it depends on whether it's a 7 p.m. or an 8 p.m. show. By that time, whoever is holding that ticket is getting so nervous that they're dropping the price every half an hour. And usually by the time it's 40 minutes before the show, the price is at face value of the ticket. And that's when she jumps. She buys the ticket. And the reason she's lurking in a Times Square hotel is because then she has to print out the ticket. So she goes to the desk. They print it out for her. And boom, she's seen Bruce Springsteen without getting scalped. I thought that was a pretty neat tip.
Seems like a lot of work, though. It's a lot of work to and you to sit. And what if you don't get anything? You've wasted your whole evening.
Well,
and you're asking a hotel you're not staying in to print things for you.
Well, they'll print for things for you. And the good thing is, if you don't get in, if you can run to TKTS and get half-price tickets for something else. Usually the line is not that long at that point. The old-fashioned way. I see.
Yeah, there's a TKTS. There's one of those booths here in London, though. But interestingly, though, the best tickets go first thing in the morning here. Unlike, you know, in New York, you can go right before the show here at 10, and there's our line already because people are getting the best seats right away at TKTS.
Oh, that's interesting. And that's not something that people don't know about the TKTS in New York. In New York, the theaters are giving them tickets as the day goes on, as they're assessing what their availability is. So you don't always get the best seats by going first thing in the day when it opens. Often you get really good seats if you go later, because that's when the house seats are released. House seats are the premium tickets in the house that are saved for members of the cast who might have family who want to come. And so every day those are released at about 4 or 5 p.m. So you want to get those house seats. Let's move back to the phones. We have Jim calling from Howard Beach. Hey, Jim, nice to speak with you.
Yes, Paulina, nice to speak to you. You're a great show. I have a quick question about traveling to Spain this summer and getting a bus tour or some tour to Portugal and back to Spain.
Okay, I think the best thing to do is to go to one of the new aggregator sites for tours. There's one that's called Viator. There's another called Tripwing, like you're flying and it's a trip. There's another, I'm hoping Jason can look up my article on this while I'm talking to you. What's so great about these tours is they take you, they tell you about all of the different options. So there might be a tour that's run by a Portuguese company that goes to all the same places that, you know, the major companies like Cosmos and I'm trying to remember, Grand Circle go to, but for much less because they're based in Portugal. That's all they do, and they get better prices. You'll see that there are 40-person tours. There are 12-person tours that just go around on public transportation, getting you a little bit off the beaten path. There are bike tours. There are walking tours. This way you get the entire lay of the land, because there's no one tour company, I think, that's best for every single destination. And sometimes you get really good tours when you go with a local company that only deals, say, with Portugal. Jason, did you find the other names?
I think you might be thinking of tripwing.com, which I think you said that.
Yeah.
Stride Travel and TourRadar.com. TourRadar.com. That might be the third you were thinking of.
Yeah. So Tripwing, TourRadar, and Stride Travel. They're all terrific sites, and they'll give you an idea of the vast array of options you have for this type of tour. A lot of people don't realize how many different ways there are to do this.
Okay, yeah, so we're trying to cover much ground in 12 days.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, hopefully you'll be able to see, you'll definitely be able to see on this site how many places they would cover. But can I ask why you're trying to cover a lot of ground in 12 days?
Well, we have a tour. We're going to see our relatives in Spain. So we're going to tour for 2 weeks and then probably stay in Spain for another week.
Okay. But, you know, sometimes I find that when you slow down, you actually enjoy it more. So, you know, if you were to plop yourself down for 3 or 4 days in Lisbon, say, or in Porto, and spend some of the time just wandering, lost, you know, and meeting the people and having a glass of wine at a sidewalk cafe, you'll have a better understanding of Portuguese culture and probably more affection for it than if you try and see every single one of the top sites, throwing yourself from place to place. I'm a big proponent of slow travel. I think it's much more fun.
Okay, we'll try and extend it for 3 weeks, which probably be a nice
yeah, that's it.
Okay?
Yeah.
We're tired, and we live by Kennedy Airport, so we're in Howard Beach.
I am jealous of your life. That sounds great.
Well, thank you, Paulina. Thanks for your help.
Sure. We have to take one more quick break, but we'll be right back after these messages.
The Frommer's Guidebooks come alive. Pauline Frommer and Jason Cochran. The Frommer Travel Show on 77 WABC.
All right, we've got a couple of minutes left, enough time to talk about some interesting new developments in travel. One has to do with Brexit. Jason, you take it.
And it's not going to sound like it has to do with Brexit when I tell you what it is. But if you've ever wanted to have a road trip that combines Ireland with Spain, yes, you can do that now. Because for the very first time, a ferry is going to be joining the two countries. So that you can pull your car, you know, drive around Spain, pull your car on board, 26 hours, pull your car off in Ireland and tour around there instead, and, you know, for the second half of your vacation. It's happening because of Brexit. Because, you know, traditionally for all these years, you could go from Ireland through the UK to get to the continent, the mainland. There's so much uncertainty about what the border is going to be like going back, which will no longer be a part of the EU, that this ferry company, Brittany Ferries, it's been around for many decades, just said, you know what, we're going to start the ferry now. And so now you can go to Spain without ever leaving the EU. So it's going to be much easier if Brexit creates border issues between Ireland and the rest of the Isle. So it could be interesting to see what happens. But it's a great idea if you want to take a road.
But I don't understand. Here's the snafu, though, Jason. Don't they drive on different sides of the road in Spain and in Ireland?
I think that's easy. Think about it. That's easy because you stop your car in the ferry and pull off the ferry. Okay, now you're going to be on the right. That's all.
But you're
it's simple because you know it's not. You've stopped your car.
But your steering wheel will be on the wrong side. I think that's going to be really confusing.
Well, that'll be a fun – you know what? Maybe that's my next vacation. I'll go to the port, and I'll sit there with a lounge chair, and I'll watch people try to figure out what to do as they pull off the ferry.
Good idea. Good idea. And the other big news in travel – I don't know if it's big, but it tickled us – is that the Shinkansen, which is the high-speed trail in Japan, is just going to get so much cuter. There's so much that's cute in Japan, but this is going to be adorable because it's going to be Hello Kitty themed. They're going to paint the whole darn train Hello Kitty. I don't know why that tickles
and
me.
And change
so much.
The bells. Even the sound, like when you pull into the station, it's going to be the Hello Kitty theme song, which I did not know there was one, but apparently it's very popular in Japan.
And Japan itself is popular. You know, I've talked a little bit about it on the show because I was just there. They are going to have 246 million people visiting this year. That is something like 5 times as many people as used to visit Japan just 5 years ago. So it's become this wildly popular place. Having just been there, I can somewhat understand why. It's a wonderful place to go. Incredibly friendly, incredibly safe, incredibly clean, wonderful food. But I think the main driver may be the fact that the yen is nowhere near as powerful as it used to be. So you spend a lot less money than you used to go to Japan.
Yeah, I think so too. Because you know, it remember the 80s when everyone couldn't afford to go?
Yeah. Yeah, but now it's doable. And I hear music in my ears. That means we have to say goodbye for another week. We thank you so much for listening. And to those who are traveling, including Jason, bon voyage.